ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
And so before I say a few more things, I'd just like to hear why you came here tonight. A few of you just say, what was your intention, what brought you here? And what did you have in mind? Like, what did you think you were going to get? Yes, Amrita Namprabhu.
I was hoping to get really inspired that if we go out tomorrow, hoping we can go out tomorrow, that we'll have some really good ideas how we can connect with people out there in the world.
Okay. So, inspired to go out and also have ideas of how to connect. So, one thing about going out, it's a part of going within. And I'll explain what I mean. Book distribution is not so much about getting numbers of books out, because that happens automatically when we are in the right mood and we're feeling happy. It just happens by Krishna's arrangement. Krishna sends people. The main reason that we go out is because it's a high sadhana. It's a kind of practice to go out. And when you cross the threshold of your apartment on the way out, or the temple, isn't there a little voice inside your head somewhere that's saying, I think my mom's calling me to come back home and make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and therefore I won't go out this time. Maybe in the future I'll go out, because my mom might starve without a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. One of the most challenging of sadhanas is just walking out the door, because it's natural to seek one's comfort zone. And when we go out into the what I like to call the great unknown, I've been doing this almost going on close to 50 years or something like that. And every time I go out, it's a thrill. It's a thrill because I'm walking outside my comfort zone. And that's the main reason I go out, is what it makes of me to actually go out the door. Because as I've said in the past many, many times, we should feel uncomfortable when we're in our comfort zone. And we should feel comfortable when we're outside our comfort zone, because that's where the progress is. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, of course he told his renunciates in the mutt, that they should go out every day and at least knock on three doors. And he said, when you're neglected, does anybody here get neglected when you go out for book distribution? Two people? Five? Six, seven, eight, nine, ten? Did anybody ever, like, ignore you? Feels good, right? Anybody tell them no? A gunshot, that's a good one. You could tell, you know, a lot of people about that. They'll impress them. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that when you're neglected or refused, then actually you're getting spiritual blood for your spiritual body called chid rakta, which means a spiritual blood for your chid sharira, for your spiritual body. That's how you develop that kind of heavy spiritual maturity, is by doing austerity. And so the greatest of austerities is just to walk out the door and not know what's going to happen next, right? When you go in the kitchen, you have a pretty good idea what's going to happen. Of course, you know, somebody else can be in your spot cooking, or, you know, there's always room for, in every service, for some kind of challenge. But it's unique when you walk out the door to meet people who didn't ask you to come over. And you submit to that. Who else does that? I'm thinking of Srila Advaita Acharya. Now, he's a personality of God, the personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu. But he goes door to door. How'd you like it if you're sitting in your house and Advaita Acharya came to your door? What would you do? How about Srila Haridas Thakur? How about Nityananda Prabhu? I mean, what would you do? Lord Nityananda used to go to people's homes and he would roll on the floor and beg them to take Krishna consciousness. That's how seriously he took distributing mercy to other people. We tried it. We'll do anything. We were in Toronto. I mean, I didn't actually roll on the floor, but I got on my knees, and other devotees started doing it too. And it's one of the most humbling experiences. I went to the house. This woman opened the door. She said, "You know, we showed her the Gita." She said, "We're Muslim." The man was invisible. He was right across, but he was watching television, and he was being very demonstrative about ignoring us. And so, but the woman was kind of nice and charming and stuff like that. But she said, "I can't do anything without my husband." So he could see us. So the two of us, I was with another devotee, and there were like five devotees behind us. We both got on our knees, right in the doorway. And I saw him glance over, and he kept watching the television. But how can he resist that? It's really hard. And she couldn't close the door on us either. She was too pious. So one thing led to another. The man finally came over and began pontificating about his philosophy of life and everything like that. I'll make the story shorter. At the end, what happened was he ended up taking a book, and he said he'll give a donation, and he gave like $2 or something, and his wife said, "That's ridiculous." And she came back and she gave $50. And it all ended up as a big love fest at the door. You know, that they loved us, we loved them, they took the books. And it was an open-heart reciprocation that happened, very personal thing. And we were following in the footsteps of Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya and Haridas Thakur and other stalwart devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to go door to door. And they did. Do you have a seventh canto of Bhagavatam? I want to show you a secret. And when you hear this, your life will never be the same. So if you don't want that to happen, I suggest that maybe you go in a holding cell upstairs. And you can just wait up there, and we'll call you when we're done. And then you can come back, and everything will be normal. Okay? Who would like to go up? You're all staying, I'm warning you. When you hear this, you may freak out. Okay, this is from Prahlad Maharaj's prayers that he's offering to Lord Nrisimhadev. And if you study these prayers very carefully, you'll notice that Srila Prabhupada was in this mood of Prahlad Maharaj, of saving the conditioned souls from the material world. This is the mood of great souls. And here, Prahlad is saying that he's not so concerned about himself. He said, "Because I have devotional service, I'm fine." I'm just getting there. Haven't found it yet. And that he said, "What I'm really worried about..." I'll just read 43, and then I'm going to the next couple of verses. "O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid." This is 7.9.43. "O best of the great personalities," Prahlad praying to Lord Nrisimhadev, "I'm not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with life, concerned with love for them. My dear Lord Nrisimhadev," number 44, "I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalaya or to the forest to meditate with vows of silence. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. I therefore wish to bring them back to the shelter of your lotus feet." And then Prabhupada writes in his purport that the devotees, he says, "the members of the Krishna consciousness movement are not at all interested in so-called meditation in the Himalaya or the forest, where one will only make a show of meditation nor are they interested in opening many schools for yoga and meditation in the cities. Rather, every member of the Christian Consciousness Movement, are there any members in here? Raise your hand if you're a member of the Christian Consciousness Movement. Let's get a count. Okay. He says, every member of the Christian Consciousness Movement is interested in going door to door to try to convince people about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That is the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. The members of the Krishna conscious movement must be fully convinced that without Krishna, one cannot be happy. Thus, the Krishna conscious person avoids all kinds of pseudo-spiritualists, transcendentalists, meditators, monists, philosophers, and philanthropists. So this is a tradition that we have in our line of teachers, that they go out and they meet people door to door. So when we do that, we get an experience of what the great souls have done. And we also are in a state of perpetual dependence on Krishna. Like, what's the first thing that happens when you knock on somebody's door? Physically. That's right. Your heart starts a little fat. Like, what's going to happen? You have no idea who's going to open the door, right? It's like an interest. When I go to door to door, one of my techniques is that you know, do you ever go to somebody's house for prasadam? Say yes.
Yes. Yes.
And when you go over there, I mean, for me, it's one of the most happy times in my life. I'm going to see friends. We're going to go take prasadam. We'll have a little kirtan. And it, like people in the world, I go home for Thanksgiving, because everyone likes to break bread and be with friends and family and stuff like that, right? So when I go to a door, in my mind and heart, I think, I'm going to meet my best friend who's inside. And I'm thinking that these are kindred souls in here. So I knock on the door, and I just keep that frame of reference. And when they open the door, I'm, hi. You know, that energy just comes out. And you never know who's going to be in there. But one thing Prabhupada said about who's in there, when he was in Vrindavan, before he came to America, he wrote in his poetry, Vrindavani Bhajan, beautiful, beautiful poetry he wrote. He's pining for his spiritual master. He's also thinking, how will I fulfill the mission of my guru? And he said that people all over the world, they're sitting in their apartments, and they're looking out the window down the road, and they are wondering, when are Nitai and Gaur going to come and save me? And you know what? It's true. You know, sometimes in one's mind, one might think, oh, you know, people are busy, I'm going to be bothering people. You know, maybe we should tread more lightly or something like that. We should always tread lightly. But the fact is, nobody's really doing anything in there. I mean, nothing of significance. They don't even know where they came from or where they're going or how long they're going to live or anything like that. And frankly, material life is a real grind. And when there's an intervention, when somebody brings pictures of the spiritual world into their house and suddenly the door closes, that household is never the same ever again. I mean, imagine the conversations that take place after the door closes. You left the Bhagavad Gita inside, you closed the door, you went down the street, and then, you know, then people come home. It's like, hey, where'd this come from? And the conversation starts. Somebody reads one word, one line. Prabhupada thought like this. You know, what happens when they read one word, one line? What is the change that takes place? And every single book that goes out has a story. There isn't one that doesn't have a story. Every one of them has. Vijay Prabhu is coming out with a new book. He's compiled so many of the anecdotal experiences devotees have had going on book distribution. So he asked me to write the introduction to the book. And when I was reading, I had to read the book to write the introduction. So when I read all of the anecdotes, devotees, the amazing things that happen, the encounters they have with people and how it changes their life. And then if you extrapolate from that, the millions of books that go out, sometimes people say, we've distributed so many millions of books, you know, where's the millions of devotees and what's the result? And the fact is that you may not see the result on each individual scale, but results only happen when somebody makes an endeavor individually and meets another individual. It happens one-to-one when a devotee takes it upon him or herself to go and deliver the book and put it in somebody's house, that's when the magic happens. And that takes place one after another, after another, after another. And when you get a lot of devotees doing that, it makes a huge impact on the world. These are seeds, and seeds will grow, and they'll have their impact. So going out is a big deal, and going in is a big deal also. And the two have to go together in order to have really balanced sadhana, or I'd say what I like to call super sadhana. Who here likes rice? Raise your hand, come on. Unless you only eat quinoa. Okay, who here likes dal? Likes dal or thinks it's a good food? Okay. Now, according to Jamuna's cookbook, it's an encyclopedic cookbook. I looked this up on the section on rice. When you put rice and dal together, 42% more nutrition. Did you know that? Through synergy, the enzymes complement one another, and then it becomes a superfood. So in the same way, going out, whether you do anything or not, don't even worry about it. That's up to Krishna. But just going out, past the threshold of the door, that feeling you get when your mom's calling you, I need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but you go out anyway, and you go to the spot, and you overcome that, you know, that hesitation, that's powerful. Then, on the other side, when you overcome that idea that your mind has and might have told you at one time or another in your life that the Bhagavad Gita is boring, you can admit it. You walk past and you thought, I should read my Bhagavad Gita, but the mind said, nah, that's boring. I'd rather look at, fill in the blank. It starts with an F. Ends with a K. It's got two words. So don't believe it. That's the time when you actually make advancement. In that split second when you say, you overcome the mind and you say, I'm going to sit down and read the Bhagavad Gita. 2 seconds later, you suddenly say, there's nothing better than this. Why didn't I do this before? Why didn't I think of this before? Why did my mind talk me out of this before and waste so much time? And the same thing with going out. When we go out into the great unknown, there's a contact with the internal potency that you can't get anywhere else. It's so thrilling. And even if you're just part of it, even if you don't actually knock the door, you just stand in the back and watch the other people do it. Your heart's also going to pump. And you get credit too. It's like when somebody robs a bank, the guy who drives the car, he goes to jail too. It's by association. All you have to be is on the team. Even if you sit on the bench, if the team wins the championship, you still get the ring. So, you know, this is the team you want to be on, the team that's actually going out. Going out is like breathing. A community has to have oxygen. Oxygen means when you go out and you have an experience. You know, we were here, when did we first come here?
2012.
Oh, my God. 2012, it was 108 degrees. We remember that part. It's baked in. 2012 was 108 degrees. And we were going door to door. Somebody tell me if they were on this party, because we split up into about 5 groups. You were there, right? You know what I'm going to say, don't you? It's in my heart and memory. In fact, a lot of times when I chant japa, I remember this. We went to one door, and you tell me if I get the details right, you can help me. We went to one door. There were these apartments that looked like every other apartment practically in North Carolina. And except they had this little extra kind of little gate around it. We went through the gate. That also gets your heart going. Went through the gate, and we knocked on the door, and it took a little while for it to open. And what we saw was a man who was severely disabled physically, and maybe slightly mentally, although I don't think so from the end result. And he also had a caretaker. Obviously, like, you know, somebody was there to make sure that this person would be able to survive, you know, assisted living. He's a young man, too. And I showed him the book. He was so enthusiastic about it that he fought off his caretaker, who wanted him to give it back and wanted us to go away and jump in a lake. And so he fought for it. It was demonstrative. It wasn't just like out of curiosity. There was something primal that he wanted the book. So then we explained it with the caretaker standing fuming that she wasn't winning the war. And finally, we asked for the donation. That's when the caretaker went crazy. But he was so determined. He went back and he made her bring money out and give it to us, right? And then she thought it was all over, said, close the door. And then we said, there's one more thing. Do you believe in the power of prayer? And he went. And we said, I want to teach you this beautiful prayer. It's meant to wake up love for God in your heart. They're names of God. I want you to repeat after me. The caretaker was like, no. And he fought her off again. And two words at a time, we said, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
And he said, Hare Krishna. He could barely get enough strength to make his muscles in his throat and neck work. I said again, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
He strained every sinew in his body just to get the sound out. And he went through the whole mantra. And then the door closed. The book was in. We had won a battle. I turned around. And there were tears coming from the eyes of the devotees. And I think I asked you. One of the devotees said to me, I wish I had that much enthusiasm to chant. I sit down every day and I barely pay attention. And he was dying for it. And these are the kinds of experiences that you get. Krishna teaches you how to actually embrace the holy name and do sadhana. You get them, and that's oxygen. When you bring that back into the temple, it is demonstrative how the environment of the whole community changes just by a group of devotees going out. They bring back that oxygen into the kirtan, into the classes, into the way they say jai during the prema dhwani. All of these things are palpable because there is nothing that can replace that live experience that you actually challenged yourself. You went beyond the threshold of the door and you went out and you did it. And then when you sit down to chant, that holy name that you imparted to somebody else, that's special. And that reverberates in your mind and heart. And when you chant, it has special potency because it's the mercy of Lord Nityananda, who appreciates so much that the devotees go out and try to save people who normally nobody's going to care about them. If we hadn't have gone to that door, which was totally random, who else would have gone there? And I think that all the time. We go to these obscure places. You know, we were at some mall in Southern California, and there was three levels to it. Like, let's try the third floor. There was nobody there. All the offices were closed. We finally went down all the way to the end, and there was some lady there, really surprised that anybody came up there to her insurance company. They don't get guests up there. And we left books with them, and when we walked away, we were thinking, like, how else would have that ever happened? And it changes the course of history of the universe when one person comes in contact with Krishna's holy name and with the Bhagavad Gita. That's life. Everything else is downright boring. So don't live a life of boredom. Challenge yourself outside your comfort zone. Don't worry about the numbers. It doesn't matter. The main thing is walking out the door. In fact, all over the world, we have this protocol. When we start a monthly Sankirtan festival, the only goal we have is to touch the pavement. That means the hardest part of Sankirtan is just walking out the door and getting a group of devotees to move from point A to point B. Because that's not so easy, because the material world is called Durga. Durga Chati means difficult to go. Isn't it hard to move around? What to speak if you get 5 or 10 or 50 or 100 people moving them from one place to another. But if you get there and you touch the pavement, you're done for the day. You don't have to do anything else, unless you want to. You can do something extra, but no pressure. Everyone can go out. So what Amrita Nam Prabhu said about going out is really important, because when you go out, then you're able to go in and chant with very, very deep feeling, because you'll remember the service that you did, and Krishna will remember you for what you did. And then you said something about being inspired, right? I think so. So there's a few things to remember. One is to have confidence for distributing books. It helps to know have a few ideas about what you're going to do and how you're going to present. Because frankly, when you go out and meet people, there's ways in which they may zig when you thought they were going to zag. And if you have a template in your mind and you've seen it and you've done it a few times, then what happens is you develop some confidence. And also, if you watch others distribute books who have confidence already, because they've done it enough times to know that even if you're not very good at it, if you just keep doing it, you're going to meet sincere people that will take. So here's some advice as far as the practicality of book distribution. Actually, before I give that, I want to ask a couple more people why you came here. What were you expecting? Mataji. Let's give her a big round of applause. You know, that was so inspiring, just to hear those words come from her mouth. You know how proud Srila Prabhupada would be of you? That you would go out. He did it himself. He went by himself all over India. He traveled on trains, third class, just taking his books around. He went by himself in the hot sun and met people. And there you are, following in the footsteps. You came here because you want to go out on book distribution. It's a rare soul to have a desire like that, that I just want to go out and please Krishna by trying and doing whatever I can, just touch the pavement, see what can happen. Thank you so much. You made my whole evening. Really, that's powerful. Anybody else? Yes, Prabhu. Improve determination in your sadhana. That's a really powerful desire to have. As most people don't even think about sadhana, what to speak of developing determination in it. And whenever I present the basics of book distribution, I present four laws. Who can remember what they are? First one is? Actually, everything starts with strong sadhana. Your sadhana must be strong, say.
Your sadhana must be strong.
Okay, and your response should be a little stronger too. Your sadhana must be strong.
Your sadhana must be strong.
That's right. So Prabhupada uses three words throughout his teachings to describe good sadhana. Strict, serious, and sincere. And I just took those three words, put them in one place, and made a little necklace out of them, and you can wear it around. Make yourself a necklace or bracelet with strict, serious, and sincere. And if you remember that to do strict, serious, and sincere sadhana every day, then you get what I call, you're doing what's called inspirational sadhana. See, non-inspirational sadhana is illegal. It's mentioned in the Upadeshamrita that don't do sadhana without getting a taste. So, like Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, the great orator and philosopher and, you know, amazing devotee, he says, so you sign up for a gym, January 1st, of course. And you get in there at the gym and you start lifting weights on the first day, and then you know, maybe second, third day, but then you start thinking, well, I like this idea of going to the gym, but I really don't like lifting the weights. So I'll go to the gym, but instead of lifting the weights, I'll just move my arms. No weight. So in a similar way, I like the idea of chanting. I've heard about it. Makes a lot of sense. But while I'm chanting, I'll just think of something else. That's not inspirational sadhana. You have to go with your hand out. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, beg for it. Really beg. If you have your hand out and you're really asking, Krishna, please give me something, anything, one tiny drop. I don't have anything. I never got anything. If you could just give me one molecule of taste. And if you chant like that and lean into it, then your whole life changes. It can change in one day, in one mantra, from one mantra. Only problem is I don't pay attention. So if you have that kind of sadhana, then what you get is overflow. Because one molecule of taste for chanting good japa can flood all of North Carolina. No? It can flood all of the eastern seaboard. No? It'll go all the way into the Midwest and beyond into the West Coast to flood all of America. No? It'll continue all the way across to Japan, into Korea, China, down to Australia, across to Africa, up into Europe, Antarctica. You can flood the whole world with one molecule of taste for the holy name. It's so powerful. And Sankirtan is about spontaneity. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started his institution, which was fabulously successful, called the Gaudiya Math, all over India, people were chanting Hare Krishna. Everyone came to know who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were distributing millions of books and leaflets and pamphlets and in public debates everywhere. And he made on it, he put his logo for the organization, and on it he put a picture of the printing press. The printing press. And above it he put the words Rag Marg. People talk about Rag Marg, Ragatmika Bhaktas and Raghunuga Bhakta. There is no greater Raghunuga Bhakta than Srila Prabhupada getting on a freighter when he's an elderly person and coming to America with a box of books. That's spontaneous. And that's what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta meant. Book distribution, spontaneous devotional service. If you chant like there's no tomorrow, and there may not be, one day that's going to be true. If you chant like that, then you'll get such a taste that when you go out, that's what people see. They're not buying the book. They're buying what you have in your eyes. They feel you. Through the door, they feel you. They'll look through that little peephole and go, whoa! Because they feel the spiritual energy coming through. You can't get that anywhere else except in the Hare Krishna mantra, and especially in your japa, because it's your own individual effort that I'm personally going to surrender now. So if you have inspirational sadhana every day, then you'll naturally overflow everywhere you go. It's not a matter of a mechanical thing just going out on book distribution. Oh, by the way, since I mentioned the printing press, I saw that original printing press just recently. We were on our yatra, and we went to Calcutta, which was the best part of the yatra, and we went to the Bagh Bazar Mandir. I've never been there before. And we were shown all the way around. It was heartrending to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's flagship temple there. And I saw his room, but all in the back of my mind, I was thinking, where is the printing press? I heard so much about it. I wrote about it in my book. He had it installed near the deities to show that this is a worshipable item, the printing press. So we started asking around, and you know, there was a locked door here. Nobody knew this and that. But then Hansapriya, she's a very determined person. She kept asking this one, that one. She was on the phone talking to this one, that one. Finally, senior brahmachari came out and said, okay, there's 100 of you. I can only take 3. So she introduced me to the head brahmachari. We told, you know, I'm a disciple of Prabhupada. I'm into book distribution. This, he said, I'll take you. So they're building a museum there, and we went up the elevator in the museum. It's under construction. It's going to open sometime this summer. We got away to the floor. Still construction going on in there. I walked through the door, and there's the printing press sitting there. It was just automatic that I fell on the ground and offered obeisances, because I'd heard about it, I thought about it. It's so symbolic of our whole movement, this Yukta Vairagya, using everything to spread the holy name through literature distribution, literary kirtan. So then I get up and I walk around the backside of the printing press, and I look on it, made in Cleveland, Ohio. I looked it up online. It was a company that was in business for about 80 years, finally went out of business recently. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went to the ends of the earth to bring that technology into the realm of transcendental yukta vairagya to spread the holy name all over the world. He worshipped that machine because it printed books with the holy name on it that would be taken door to door. And when anybody goes out for the book distribution, they are part of that legacy. You're connected to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's desire. And there's nothing more powerful than the desire of the pure devotees. It's called Mahatkritena. It's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, 2nd chapter. That when you follow in the footsteps of the great souls and try to fulfill their desires, then automatically you make advancement in devotional service by their mercy. So book distribution is not something about sales. This is a high sadhana. And when you chant so that you'll have the potency to go out and present it, you get this balance. When you go out, then you're thinking, I'm going to go back and I'm going to chant. And when you're chanting, you think, I need the power to go out. See, these two things balance themselves. That's the rice and the dal. 42% more nutrition. And you need nutrition in spiritual life. You got to be spiritually nourished. Otherwise, you're going to turn into a skinny little Denny Masano. Ricky Masano. He was my friend in grade school. He did an experiment for our science class. He was the skinniest guy in class. Everyone used to tease him. And he got two white lab rats, the same weight and same size. Put them in two separate cages. One of them he fed Wonder Bread, which is white bread that was claimed to be like really good for you, but it wasn't, because that's what Ricky ate. He was really skinny. And the other rat, he gave the best nutritious food that you could possibly give a rat. And at the end of the experiment, he had one skinny rat that looked just like him, and he had one super rat, and he won the science fair. And Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you have a poor diet spiritually, you're going to turn into a modern-day Ricky Masano. You'll be spiritually scrawny, skinny, easily pushed over by Maya at any time. But if you take in the most nutritious food, read Srimad Bhagavatam every day, count the pages. How many pages you do every day before you do anything else or before you go to sleep or whatever, and chant your japa. Arrange your life in such a way that you can chant your japa with attention. Everything will change and become strong. And when you have that, then you'll have the wherewithal to go out and give it to others because you have something to give. And the second law of book distribution is, it's two words.
Get books.
Okay, now in the military when you join, they teach you to say, sir, yes, sir. So on number two, we always say it in a military way. So what's the second law of book distribution?
Get books!
You'd be kicked out of the army. Try it one more time with a little more enthusiasm. On to, what is the second law of book distribution?
Get books!
That's right. You want to scare the neighbors when you say that one. So now we came about this one. We've done a lot of research into these laws, and we went to Ivy League schools. We did double-blind studies, and we found that you can't distribute books that you don't have. It's conclusive. We tried it. So these books are our greatest treasures. In the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were copied by hand. Mahaprabhu found the manuscript for the Brahma Samhita. He had it copied by hand. That's a lot of work. What is your name in the front? What is your name?
Harini.
Harini. That's a beautiful name. Harini. Have you ever seen the Brahma Samhita, the book? It's about this big, maybe has about 80 pages in it. It's got 70 shlokas altogether and some commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. If you were to copy it by hand, how long would it take you, do you think? Approximately, just give a guess. If you had to sit at the kitchen table.
Three years.
Give her a hand. She knows what she's doing. Good, honey. Good devotee. Now, if you dial up Los Angeles tomorrow, you can get a box of Brahma Samhitas. Don't take it for granted, please. These come from the spiritual world. The fact that we have technology that can do high-speed printing, that's just the benediction of the age. There's a lot of downside to technology, but that's the one, practically out of two or three. Hearing also is another thing. But that's one of the biggest things we have going for us. We can mass produce these transcendental scriptures like the Brahma Samhita. So the most valuable thing that you can keep in your home, in your car, anywhere else, is these books. And when you have them, then you'll start thinking, boy, I should take these with me and distribute them. And if you put one in your pocket when you go to the store, it's not just an excursion to the grocery store. You're thinking all the way there, well, what am I going to do? Is Lord Chaitanya going to send it? Am I actually going to pull it out of my pocket? Am I going to talk to somebody? What should I do? So you want to be in that space. You want to have books with you all the time. Then you're living in that internal energy rather than just going to the grocery store. So then the third law of book distribution, you don't have to say it like military, but we always say it twice because it's so important. The third law of book distribution is the more you show, the more you sell. Okay, say it again.
The more you show, the more you sell.
One more time.
The more you show, the more you sell.
Now I'm teaching you laws that are infallible, and I personally guarantee these laws. If you use these, you will be wildly successful in developing your own book distribution and your community book distribution. You'll build an empire if you just follow the four laws, that's all. So showing books means little Jiva is wandering all over the universe looking for something nice. And what does little Jiva see? Coca-Cola. A sign that says, pour out the happiness. So little Jiva then, what does he do? He sees the sign for Coca-Cola. What does he do next? Okay, poor little Jiva, he sees the sign. Now what does he do next? He goes and buys Coca-Cola. And he brings it home, and every cell in his body is screaming out, don't put that in here. But little Jiva said, I saw it on the sign, so I'm going to drink my Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola, if you ever have coins that get tarnished, soak them in Coca-Cola. They'll turn shiny again. It's not something you want to drink. Sorry if any sponsors are listening. The fact is, Jiva is called tatasta. Do you know what that means? What does marginal mean, actually? Well, here's what I think it means. Open to suggestion. Every single living entity is open to suggestion. I see people flip on stuff all the time. Remember Kaikeyi? She flipped. She was totally for Ram, and then about, you know, an hour later, after hearing from Mantra, it's called the Mantra effect. She listened to Mantra for a little while, then she said, I hate Ram. He's going to steal my son's place. Jivas, they can go any way, so it makes a difference what you tell them. You can have an effect. Don't think you don't have an effect. You're chanting Hare Krishna. You're reading Srimad Bhagavatam. What's coming out of you is transcendental. It'll change their life if you just say a few things. Give them a chance. Tell them. And you'll see. They may go home with the idea in their head, and then later they'll change. Or they might change on the spot. But you have to show these books, because if they see these, it's not like anything else they've ever seen before in their life. And if you don't do anything else, you don't learn how to say anything about the books, if you just show them an artful way, like I guarantee, if you just go downtown, where are we, Charlotte? Hillsborough?
Raleigh.
If you just go downtown and hold a book like this, this is what the Jehovah's Witness do. You just hold the book, just stand there and don't say a word to anybody. I promise you, or I'll pay you for your time that day, whatever the company was paying you, I'll pay you for your time to stand there all day. I guarantee you somebody's going to walk up to you and say, you know, what is that? Can I have that? Can I buy it? How much is it? Can I come with you? Can I do this too? I mean, but if you don't go out and show it, what's going to happen? Let's ask Harini. If you don't go out and show the book, what might happen? Say nothing. Correct. Give her a hand. Well, I don't know about you, but I didn't show up in this life to do nothing. And when you take books out, that's something. And you just show them. And you can invent all kinds of ways. You know Jayananda, the famous Jayananda? He was my bhakta leader in San Francisco in 1973. He used to drive a cab. He and Kay Shabardi. now Kesha Bharti Maharaj. They used to drive cabs to support the temple. Jayananda would always leave a book in the back seat. And when the fair would get in, they'd go, hey, there's a book in the back seat. And he goes, oh, okay, yeah, we'll have a look at it. And by the time they got there, they'd buy the book. Because this is showing. You can be innovative. There's not one way to show. There's millions of ways to show. Think about it. And if you show it, people come and they'll take the book. They'll get attracted. They'll take it. And the fourth law of book distribution is that you must organize. Because if you do it as a hobby, just in your spare time, lackadaisically, you'll do a little book distribution, yourself and your community. But if you get organized, you can create an empire. And there's a really good feeling behind that. When you have that force, it lifts up the whole community. All the programs in the whole community become enhanced by the energy of book distribution, of the devotees feeling ecstatic that they were able to work together as a team and go to different places and do something significant together, going out into the great unknown. Even if they don't distribute any books, at least if they go out and touch the pavement together, the whole community changes because of that. And organizing, thankfully, is a science that has been well explicated all over the world. NASA came up with all kinds of ideas when they were trying to build rockets, and they had a point at which the rocket actually had to be shot off, so they had to be efficient. They had to learn how to do management. Modern management's taught everywhere. You can get books on management. You could talk to devotees who know how to manage. Devotees who stay home and take care of the kids, they know how to manage things. There's a lot of management information we already have. And if you come together and you organize, and every month you make 3 improvements, that's all you have to do. 3. And fill the little teeny gaps. And if you do that, in 1 year, you're going to have momentum that you've never seen before, just from 3 little improvements every month. So, number 1 law of book distribution is?
Strong.
Your sadhana must be strong, say.
Sadhana must be strong.
Get ready for number 2. What's number 2?
Get books!
Number 3, you always say twice, but not as loud. And number 4? Show the more you sell. Number 4?
Get books.
Organize. Just organize yourself, and you'll find that by incremental improvement, you'll build an army that can take over the whole world just from this one place in North Carolina. We have a tiny little temple out in Silicon Valley, started with a few devotees, 2 or 3 grihasthas, a couple of brahmacharis, and we started off our book distribution. We couldn't even afford a book table at that time. We had to beg money around and borrow it to get $100. And last year and the year before, we gave over $500,000 to the BBT in book sales.
Bravo.
And we're just, these are working people. They have kids. We don't have, it's just a lot of people doing a little bit, working together. In the spirit of let's go out to do the right thing. Let's go out into the great unknown together. Let's feel the energy that Advaita Acharya, Lord Nityananda, Haridas Thakur felt when they went out door to door. This is life. It's real life to pass the threshold of the door and go out. And it doesn't matter if you go out for 5 minutes. That's good enough. A lot of people each doing a little bit. And now I'll take a couple reflections or questions. Yes? Yes.
Yeah. And I thought I might get some ideas from your enthusiastic approach to book distribution for Hainam Sankirtan, which is sorely lacking. We go out regardless, but still, we want to get more people to join us.
People like improvement. There's an old saying in management that if whatever project you're running and team that you have running it sees, if the team sees that your project is getting better incrementally, there are improvements that are being made, then they'll do more than they have to. If they see that it's staying about the same as it ever was, no improvements, then they do just what they have to. And if they see that it's getting worse, it's degrading somehow, then they quit. It's a well-known paradigm. So with any project, if you do this, what we call ABS principle, always better service, you find at least three little gaps in your program every month, and it's not hard to do. You can find 20. But find at least three and fill the gaps every month and make little improvements. Then it becomes more and more attractive. In Silicon Valley, we started engineering our Sankirtan Harinam parties in ways and looking at it from the point of view of the audience. What are they seeing here? What are they experiencing when they come? And the more we tinkered with it and made improvements every month, the more the crowds came, the more our book table cranked out more and more books. And it turned into what we call a mini festival. It's like Rath Yatra minus the $100,000 it takes to put on a Rath Yatra. It's the essence of what we do at big festivals like Rath Yatra, where, you know, people walk in and they go like, wow, how can I be part of this? The energy can be the same with a few tweaks, some branding so it looks really sharp, some thought to how the holy name is being chanted. Is it a tune that people can follow when they walk by? Is there a tall or is there a beat that catches their attention and they can't get away? Is there beautiful dancing going on? Do people look nice that are there? Are they nice to the people who walk up? We have a meditation booth. We have a place where people can go in, sit down and learn mantra meditation, a beautiful book table. And at night, we put on a light show. We have special lights pointed in various directions. We have glowing pillars and a beautiful carpet that the devotees sit on to have the holy name. We have a first-class sound system. And we set up normally in a plaza that we used to go to and fight for the spot, but then we looked up online and found out that they give a permit. So we went to the permit office and we said, we'd like to have a permit to have our festival. And they said, oh, we don't give permits. We said, no, it's right here on your website. And they go, oh, sorry, I guess we do. So you don't know until you get that desire to make improvements to see what can be done. So one other point that is helpful, I think, is some refresher courses about how to distribute a book. Now, Srila Prabhupada was interested in this, and I'd like to mention today as a point of inspiration and also sadness that one of the greatest book distributors who ever lived just passed away a few hours ago. Her name was Labhangalatika Devi Dasi. I wrote about her in my book. She was beloved of Srila Prabhupada. He used to give her a lot of attention for her book distribution, as he did for all the devotees and especially the women's parties. He was always encouraging them to go out and do this courageous service, and he used to make comments that they were the best. And so she learned from Prabhupada and heard from him about going out and distributing books, and every night when she would come back, this was in Los Angeles on La Cienega Boulevard, he would ask, you know, how many. They were doing Back to Godhead magazines at that time. And so we offer a special prayer that may we follow her in her footsteps on her journey back home, back to Godhead. After she retired from book distribution, she was elderly, and she went with her husband and they started a Goshala in India, and that's where she passed away recently. So it's very helpful to have a little bit of training, to a refresher course. Even nurses, doctors, lawyers, you know, they go for certification extra later on, right? Because everything that you learn gradually dissipates unless you use it really frequently. And even if you do, it's important to learn new things. So if I may have a Bhagavad Gita in my hand, within 7 seconds or less.
You want soft or hard?
I would like hard, but do you have the other hardback? Yeah. Okay. I will show you an infallible technique for selling a Bhagavad Gita in which when you learn this progression that I'm about to teach you, you'll be able to sell a Bhagavad Gita to anyone, anywhere, at any time, and I guarantee it. Or your money back from this seminar. The first principle that will help you immensely is called the pick the ripe fruits principle. What's it called?
Pick the ripe fruits.
Now, when you go out to pick fruit from a tree, which fruits do you pick?
Ripe.
How do you know they're ripe, Harney?
Because
Mangoes. Let's think mangoes. How do you know you got a ripe mango? Can you see it? The difference between a ripe mango and an unripe mango?
They're green.
Which ones are green? Ripe or unripe?
Unripe.
Correct. And what about the ripe ones?
Yellow.
Give her a hand. To be successful in book distribution, you just have to know the difference between a ripe mango and an unripe mango. Because unripe mangoes are?
Green.
And ripe mangoes are?
Yellow.
You're going to be a success, I guarantee you. There's ripe mangoes and there's unripe mangoes walking around out there right now. Now, how are you going to know the difference? In 2 seconds or less, how are you going to know the difference? She knows the secret. I'm going to teach you how to know. And I'm going to save you so much extra time in your whole life when I teach you this principle. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm not convinced that you're ready.
Yes.
Oh, all right. Okay, so you have to use radar. Like the policeman who sits on the corner and he's shooting a radar gun at you. What happens? There's a beam that goes out from the gun and it comes back to his little technological device and it gives a reading, correct?
Yes.
Is that correct? Are you an engineer? You? Yes?
I don't know.
Okay. I think that's how it works. It's some kind of microwave that goes out, it touches, it comes back, it registers on the gun. And you can see how fast you're going. If it's a 50 miles an hour zone and you're going 60, they'll come and say you're going 60. How do you know? It's on my gun. So in the same way, you have radar built in. Don't sell yourself short. You're very powerful. You're living entities. You're part and parcel of Krishna. You're conscious. And when you extend your consciousness out into the world, amazing things happen. Now I'm going to teach you how to do it. So I want you to hold up your hand like this. This is your radar gun. And I want you to point it at anybody but me. Come on, point it at somebody else. And I'm going to give you the mantra that activates the beam that comes out of your hand. It hits the person. And I want you to watch and see after you hit the person with your consciousness and the beam that's coming out of your hand, I want you to notice what their reaction is and then report it back. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll say the mantra. 1, 2, 3. Hi.
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 Do you hear the laughing? Do you hear? Look around. Everybody's smiling because you are all ripe fruits. Now, if you shoot this at somebody else, I had somebody the other day, I shot him, there was no response whatsoever. It was as if I didn't exist. Kind of like I've been treating Krishna for millions of lifetimes. And now, is that, we'll ask Harini, if I shoot somebody with my radar and I say, hi, and they don't look at me, they just keep walking. Is that a ripe or an unripe fruit?
Unripe.
Give her a hand. Harini is going to be a huge success. She already is. Because she knows the difference between a ripe and an unripe fruit. And this is what Srimad Bhagavatam tells us. Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dvisatsucha prima maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhimaha. In essence, saying the preacher is meant to go and find the ripe fruits. And it's saying leave the unripe fruits on the vine. Let them ripen in the sun. That's what that song is about. Sangsara davanalali loka. They're getting ripened in the sun themselves. You don't have to do it. You can't do it. You don't have the power. So now I'm going to give you a quiz. You go to the tree. You see an unripe fruit. You grab on. It doesn't come off. So you break the branch and you drag it down the street. How am I doing so far? Yes or no?
No.
And then I drag it a little further all the way down to my car. I throw it in the back seat. Yes or no?
No.
I'm not convinced. Yes or no?
No.
I'm still not convinced. Yes or no?
No.
You are correct. Following in the footsteps of Harini, who's got all the right answers up here. So the fact is, we don't follow somebody if they don't give us a positive response. You wait and see. You make a conscious connection. If there's a ripe fruit of somebody's home and they look back at you and they register, then you can ask a qualifying question. And the reason we ask a qualifying question is because people have no idea why you're putting a book in their hand. So you have to qualify him first. Don't ask a yes or no question. I say, I'm from California. Where are you from?
Florida.
Florida. I love Florida. This is from California to Florida. I'll just show you. Okay? Now we'll try it again. I'm from California. Where are you from?
New Jersey.
New Jersey? I love New Jersey. It's a garden state. This is from San Francisco to New Jersey. Did you see how that worked? So you just ask somebody where they're from. Tell them where you're from. Ask them where they're from. Whatever they say, it's a qualified question. Perfect. And if you're from the neighborhood, that's okay too. Just use a suburb. And you, really? You're from Pine Valley? Pine Valley. Fantastic. Here. This is from, where are we now?
Morrisville.
From Morrisville to Pine Valley. The next step is trust the hand. Because the eyes see, the ears hear, the feet walk, and the hand, its dharma is to grab things. So all you have to do, watch this. You all watch now. Did you see that? Did you watch it? I want you to watch again. Did you see it? The hand grabbed it. Now the mind might be saying, mm-mm, don't do it. And the hand's going, no, I'll take it. Because that's what it does. And if you're a little bit confident when you put it out there, you go like this. Now hesitate a little bit. Watch. This is a trick. Extra. This is extra. Okay. Now hesitate just a little bit. That's extra. You can thank me later. Okay. So now, the book's in their hand. But as I'm handing the book, I'm going to give you another mantra. You already have one. It's high, right? Yeah. That's one mantra. You keep these in your pocket. Now, the second mantra is tell them what's in it for them when you hand them the book. This is a book on yoga and meditation. Repeat.
This is a book on yoga and meditation.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
This is a book on yoga and meditation.
This is a book on yoga and meditation.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
This is a book on yoga and meditation.
This is a book on yoga and meditation.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
Now, as the book is making an arc through the air to their hands, I'm saying the mantra. It's a book on yoga and meditation that shows you how to get free from stress. And when I'm saying stress, the book is hitting their hand. Now, here is one of the most important communication tools you're ever going to learn. And that is, the most powerful punctuation mark in any language of the world is a question mark. Because a question mark, make one in the air. Harney, what is it? Like if you make it like that. It's got a handle on it. What would you call it? Call a friend. It's a hook. Yes. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah.
Okay, full credit. It's a hook. And whoever is asking the questions is leading the conversation. You don't tell. You ask. You have to become a master asker. And you have to ask questions that will lead the conversation in the right direction. And you can use this in all of your communications. You'll notice the more questions you ask, the more you're able to clarify, and the more you're able to lead the conversation to a fruitful ending. So now, when you're asked the question, I say, you've heard of stress before, right? Watch, I handed the books on yoga and meditation. It shows you how you got free from stress. You've heard of stress, right? Because I want to hold everything in place. I have to ask a question, right? You've heard of stress, right?
Yeah.
Really? Because you don't look stressed to me at all. In fact, you look spiritual. Everyone say it. You look spiritual.
You look spiritual.
I want you to turn to somebody next to you and tell them they look spiritual. How do you feel? How do you feel?
Awesome.
Spiritual. If you walk out of your apartment, someone comes up to you and goes, "Hey man, you look tired." How do you feel all of a sudden? You start looking in the mirror. I do look. Somebody comes and looks at you. You look terrible. How do you feel? And you like go shopping and get. You know, I gotta get myself together. But when you say, you look spiritual, this is a miracle, it's instant self-realization. Because you know what? They are spiritual. They just forgot. And in the second that you tell them they look spiritual, they suddenly remember, hey, I'm from the spiritual world. It's a miracle when you do this. This mantra is so powerful, it should be illegal. Somebody should call the police right now. So if you say, you look spiritual, then the next question comes. Are you ready for this? And this is another one you got to keep. And even if you don't learn anything else, if you learn these two things, you'll be successful. What's your secret? Turn to somebody next to you and say, what's your secret? Now I'm going to tell you why this is so important. Because I'm going to tell you something that will change the way you think about book distribution. I'm going to tell you the reason people don't want to listen to you. And I'm going to tell you the reason they don't buy the book from you. Do you want to know?
Yes.
I'm not convinced at all.
Yes!
They don't buy the book because they don't want somebody else teaching them something. Because they feel self-sufficient. They don't want somebody to condescend to them, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're walking up to them, tacitly we're saying, you're a mess. You're going to die. You could even be going down when you die. And I'm going to save you. They don't like that. So you have to change it. And when you say, what's your secret? The way you're saying it is, I am your student, you are my teacher. I'm putting you on the Vyasasana. And I'm going to sit down here, and you're going to teach me. And as soon as you do that by saying, what's your secret? You're amazed at them that they're so spiritual. And now you put them in the position of a teacher. And when you do that, then they start opening their heart to you. So now when you say, you look spiritual, what's your secret? Then what do you think they'll say? It depends what mode of nature they're in. If they're in the mode of ignorance, they say, I smoke marijuana. If they're in the mode of passion, they say, I work really hard and I keep all my ducks in a row. And if they're in the mode of goodness, they'll say, I do yoga. And a lot of other people say, I have no idea. Then you can suggest for them, you can say, you must just come from a good family. Then they say, no, I don't. Then you say, you must just be a natural. And they go, oh, I guess so. And now that's when you take the book back. Because you put the book in your hand. It's their book to look at. And the feeling is that you're freely letting them hold the book. You've established that they're a spiritual person. You've established that they're going to teach you something because they already know a lot. But you're just going to show them their book. And now I say, here, I'll show you really quick. I'm taking it back. And how fast am I showing it?
Really quick.
Really quick.
Say really quick.
Really quick.
Because they're starting to think now, is this going to be a Bhagavatam class? Or am I going to get out of here in a few seconds? So you want to tell them this is going to be really quick. So Prabhupada said, sell these books on their own merit. He said, if you just tell them what's in the book, they'll take it. Now normally when you sell a product, they give you a flip book. And you go through the flip book, and after you come to the end, then they make a buying decision. Because they it's so many good ideas and pictures at the end, they just have to have it. It's a ball peen hammer. And they have to have 10 of those. This is the flip book and the product itself. There's no difference. So all you have to show them what's in and on the book, and after you show them, they'll take the book. So on the back cover, we have Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi. Then we also mentioned Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, and Tupac Shakur. What do all of those personalities have in common? Well, they're well known and?
They read Bhagavad Gita.
And that covers a wide spectrum. So somebody's got to know at least one of those names. Then I open it up. And you don't have to go into a big diatribe about that. You just mention the names and move on. Then you open the book to the Sanskrit and you say, let's ask Harini, can you read that? She probably can. Can you read that? No, I was just testing you. And that's what we tell people. They go, can you read that? The other day, I said it, and the guy goes, yeah, I can read Sanskrit. It was an American guy. I was like, what? You're going to give double for this. So this Sanskrit, we say, okay, it's translated. I said, I'm just testing you. And say, this has been translated into English many, many times, over 400 times translated English. And of all the versions, this has become very popular in the academic circle. And then we show them USC and Georgetown University. See, it's right here in the front. See all these universities? Who's heard of University of Southern California? Three people. Five, ten. Who's heard of Georgetown University? Yep. So a lot of people have heard of these universities, and you just mentioned, see, it's used in these universities. Then you turn to the pictures, and the first picture we show them is the changing bodies. You see this? Now look it. You show them, and you hold it like this so they can see it. And you point down here and say, look, we start here, we end up here, we're just passing through. And then you can ask them for fun, where are you in all this? Harney, where are you? Where would you say you are right now? Point to the, down here. I'm over here. I was here 5 minutes ago. It goes by really fast. So you get them to engage a little bit and look at the picture. See, life cycle, we're passing through really quickly. Here's the next picture is really nice. You see this? This is from that verse, Vidyavanaya Sampane, Brahmane Gavai Hasini. It says a self-realized person sees everyone as a spiritual soul. So we show everyone, and I say, look it. This is a self-realized person. He or she sees that the spirit's within everyone's heart, therefore treats everyone with respect. People love that because they're so sick of sectarianism. So you tell them, a self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees the spirit in everyone's heart. Now comes another question, because you got to keep putting questions in your presentation. You've heard of karma, right? Harney, have you heard of karma? What does it mean to you? Just say anything. I want you to watch my reaction when she says something. Go ahead. What does karma mean to you?
Love.
Whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it would be a better world to live in. What does karma mean to you?
Like when you do good things happen back to you.
Whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. Now you ask me, but you have to do, whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. So you ask me.
What does karma mean to you?
Oh, wow. Like it's, you know, there's rainbows, and there's rabbits, and all kinds of cool stuff. Okay, repeat after me. Whoa! I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. And if you just remember that mantra, you'll be successful every time you sell a book. That mantra is so powerful. I'm lining them up. It's like a nuclear explosion. These mantras are so powerful. Even if you use one of them, you can cover a whole city. So once you tell them that, now you ask them another question. What do you do professionally? Harney, what do you do professionally? What? Say Sunday school teacher.
Sunday school teacher.
Okay, see this picture here? This guy used to be a Sunday school teacher. What do you do professionally? What do you do professionally?
Researcher.
What kind of research do you do? What kind of electrical engineering?
It's from circuits.
This guy used to be in circuits. Now, when you say that, 50% of the people will say, ha, 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 ha. And the other 50% of the people will say, and I guarantee this is true, they'll say, really? And then you say, no, not really, I'm just kidding. And then they say, ha, 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 ha. And that's when you close the book and you hand it back. Now, everyone's fine with book distribution until it comes to the donation part. Tell me if I'm correct on this. I'm going to remove all your burden from now on about asking for donation. Okay? You're welcome. You can thank me in advance on this one. This came as an evolution for me. And I've struggled as much as anybody else asking for donations. It's the most, you know, kind of worrisome part of the process. How am I going to actually broach the subject? How am I going to bring this up after all this?
Some people actually who are going to purchase the say, no, we don't need it.
Huh?
When we ask for donation, sometimes people are like, they're going to get that, take that. But then when we ask for donation, no, I don't really need it.
Oh, sure. But that just means they don't want to give. But I'm going to change that all for you right now. Because first of all, when you show the book, use the word show.
Show.
Say it again.
Show.
Say it three times.
Show. 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 Show.
Yes. We're not selling the books, are we? What are we doing?
Showing.
Yeah, we're showing the books. Showing is an innocuous word. It's okay to show it, show and tell at any time. So that's the beginning of the conversation when I'm handing it. Here, I'll show you one too, and I'm showing the book, right? So now, when I'm asking for the donation, watch what I do. We don't sell it like in a bookstore. We say, we don't sell it. She just laughed. Say, ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
I'm handing it back. We don't sell it. Book's in her hand now, like in a bookstore. We only ask for a donation. The only reason we ask is, it's an ancient tradition. When you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. Now, the reason this is powerful is because it's true. And we have the moral right to ask for donation because we're doing it on behalf of Krishna. And the reason, first of all, that we're asking for donation, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, don't give this to knowledge to people who are not devoted or austere. So how are you going to know if they're devoted or austere?
Ask for donations.
There it is. You ask for donation because that's an austerity. And when people hand over, and this is what Prabhupada said, when they hand over their hard-earned money, then they're going to think, what did this rascal just sell me? I gave my hard-earned money. Now I'm going to read it. If you give it away free, you deprive them of an opportunity. Now, what if somebody doesn't have any money? They really don't have any money. I'm going to teach you about this in a second, too. But if they really, really don't have any money, which is one out of a million, I guarantee you, then they paid attention. If they paid attention and they're interested in the book, I let them have it. Because they are a rare soul who got stopped randomly. They got the book in their hand. They paid attention. They're sincere. They want to have it. Let them have it. The money will come pouring in so fast, you don't have to worry about how much you get for books. Your main problem will be renting Brinks trucks to fill them up with the cash that you're collecting and trying to figure out where to put it all and how to spend it when you give out the books as fast as you can. So the point is that we're not asking for the money for ourselves. So I say, we don't sell it like a bookstore. We only ask for a donation. Then I say, we don't need the money. The only reason we ask is when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it on. And people understand that. I get halfway through that explanation, and people start, yeah, obviously I'm going to give. Because you're not asking tit for tat. It's not for a book. It's not ink and paper. It's not for something they can buy somewhere else on the internet for cheaper. It has nothing to do with that. It's an exchange. In fact, oftentimes I tell them, it's a penance. When you do this penance, you're going to feel really good and you're actually going to go deep within the book. You can't argue with that. It's too powerful. In fact, I was at Jagannath Puri. Every year we do our yatra in Jagannath Puri. And we call it a Sankirtan yatra. 100 devotees, many of them from China, Japan, all over the world, we joined there. The last 3 years, we distributed 5,000 books in 5 days in Jagannath Puri. And we don't speak Oriyan or Hindi or Bengali. And the way we did it was we used language cards, which is a whole other point. But when we were outside the Jagannath Temple having a huge kirtan, we had our table set up, our deities, and we were distributing books from the table. And I was talking to somebody, and a professional beggar came up to me. And she kept pulling at my arm, like, give a donation. So I gave her a book. And then she said, no, give money. And I said, no, you give me money. And then people around there started getting interesting. Here's a big American guy, and here's a poor little beggar. And who's going to win? It was like a sport. They all got around. And I would say, no, you have to give. And she felt it because I knew that money's not for me. It's for Krishna. I also know she gets the benefit from giving. She broke out in a big smile after about 2 minutes. She reached in her bag. She pulled out a handful of change and she donated it. And the whole crowd went wild. They went, "Wah!" Because when you're asking for a donation, you're asking them to engage in Krishna's service. And you have every right on behalf of Lord Chaitanya to ask people if they would give something in return. And if you don't give them the opportunity, you deprive them of a very important chance for them to engage in some service. Now, after they give a donation for the book, then you can ask them, do you believe in the power of prayer? Do you all believe in the power of prayer?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to teach you a beautiful prayer. Sanskrit language, it's meant to wake up love of God in your heart. Are you ready?
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama, Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
You guys are naturals. So when we give them the mantra, then afterwards we give them a piece of prasadam. Don't leave the house without prasadam. It's our secret weapon. Tell them, thank you very much for being so kind. It was an honor to meet you. And if they're inquisitive, they'd like to know more, get their information so you can put it on a list and you can keep in touch with them on a regular basis and invite them to come to things. And then at the end, thank them for taking their valuable time. Now, whether a person takes a book, doesn't take a book, looks at you, doesn't look at you, whatever it is, the main point is leave everyone with a good impression. This is our prime directive. What's our prime directive?
Leave everyone with a good impression.
That is correct. And if you go out with that mood, picking the right fruits, leaving everyone with a good impression, and you just sincerely try to present and don't be attached to the result, it'll come of its own accord. And try to make a lot of mistakes, because when you get make mistakes in the sequence, then later on you'll try to fix them, and when you fix them, you'll get stronger. A couple of questions, and then can we do a little experiment? Okay. Question. Yes.
Should I ask donation from a student who I know?
Yes. Now, when someone tells you they don't have any money, has that ever happened to any of you?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's several things that we can do. First of all, a lot of students don't carry cash. So when they say I don't have any money, they mean they don't have any folding money. They have credit cards. So ask me, I'll ask for a donation. So we don't sell, we just ask for a donation. And then you say, I don't have any money.
We don't sell the...
Say I don't have any money.
No, I don't have any money.
Perfect. We don't take cash. We only take MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Carte Blanche. And so you all have the slider, right?
Yeah, we all.
Yeah, and the other thing is, give them a chance to give by credit card. And you just have to be very straightforward and just tell them. And they'll either do it or they won't. And some people, they'll say, I don't have any money again. And you say, that's all right, just give a penny. Say it.
Just give a penny.
Yeah, so the reason people don't give a donation right away is because they're not sure how much to give. And they're thinking, if I give too little, it'll insult you and it'll be embarrassing for them because then you might take the book back or say, you know, what are you cheap? They don't know if the book costs $20 or $50 or whatever. So you can help that situation by telling them approximately how much. Like you can say, you know, with printing, shipping, and storage, they cost us about $10. Anything over that is a donation. That's something that you can tell people. Or you can just say, give whatever you like from your heart. There's no minimum, and more importantly, there's no maximum. Or you can say, when they say how much, you can say, we usually try to keep it under 100, but in your case, we're thinking about making an exception. If you have a little bit of a framework for them to help them out, it kind of lightens the situation, and they're willing to go along with that. So, yes. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah, what else? Yes.
When you ask the questions, I have experienced it. When you ask for donation,
yes,
they said, I'm okay. You know, you can do this. You're doing a good work. You can give this book to someone else. I'm okay.
Are you talking about Indians?
No.
But let me talk about Indians for a second. Do you have any Indians that live in this city? Not in here. I mean, in the city when you approach. Okay. Let me just give a disclaimer. This process I just taught you doesn't work for Indians at all. Don't use it on Indians. It's not for Indians, it's for non-Indians. But I'm going to tell you how to approach Indians, and you'll be 100% success rate. So with Indians, When you find an Indian, so let's say you go to a door, knock, 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 Indian opens the door, it's Mr. Agarwal. So, you don't hand him anything. Don't give him a card, big mistake. Don't give him a book, bigger mistake. Because they already have it. Their mom used to read it. Their grandmother memorized it. When I stand out there, I put them on the Vyasasan right away. I say, you know more about this than me. You know, it's actually hard to say things like that because it's hard to be humble, isn't it? So when you say this, look, you know more about this than me, say that mantra.
You know more about this than me.
You keep that in your pocket. You know more about this than me. You can say it at any time to anybody. And it opens the channels. If you want the channels open, be humble. You know more about this than me. But all solutions in the world come from the spiritual level. Nowadays, there's so many complexities in the world. And the only real solutions come from this ancient wisdom. What we're doing is we're setting up schools and teaching people Bhagavad Gita. We're printing this in languages like Japanese, Mandarin, French, Russian. And we're making them available all over the world because these spiritual answers are meant for everybody. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah, I agree. So all we're doing is a fundraiser. Say fundraiser.
Fundraiser.
Indians love that phrase. Fundraiser. Say it again.
Fundraiser.
And we're collecting money. Say we're collecting money.
We're collecting money.
That they understand. They'll immediately go to the back of the house and they'll come back with a huge donation and they'll give it to you. Because you told them straight away. If you play games with them and try to, like, you know, here's the book, you should take it, the resistance, there'll be like walls that start, you know, coming in front of you. But as soon as you tell them exactly what you're doing and honor the fact, you have to honor the fact that they know more about it than you do and that they already appreciate it and that it's a fundraiser and all we want is your money. They'll be very, very happy to give you a huge stack of cash. And then you can give them the books after they give the money, not before. So after they give you the books, the money, then you start giving them all kinds of gifts and they'll light up. They'll say, oh, this is too nice. But then there's sets. When you sell sets of Bhagavatams door to door, you do start with a book because they don't have a Bhagavatam set yet. And that's a whole other story. But that's a disclaimer about approaching Indians. But that technique will work, I guarantee it. Any other questions?
I think.
Oh, we should do the thing.
No, but I think Rishi's first question was not.
Yeah, my question was non-Indian.
Yes?
As soon as, I mean, there was an old lady, I just said, you know, the same thing I said, that we don't need to sell this, but we appreciate any donation we can give.
That's what you said?
Yeah.
That's not my mantra. I said, we don't sell it like in a bookstore. We only ask for a donation. We don't need the money. The only reason we ask is when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it's an ancient tradition. It connects you to the original teachers who have passed this down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge.
I didn't say that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. If you use this mantra, it'll work, I promise you. Or I'll pay for the book. You make a little notch in your notebook and I'll personally pay for everyone that doesn't work with that mantra. But you have to do it exactly. And if you do it exactly, then it'll take, I will pay for it. And you let them have it. Okay? Say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Can you describe the spiritual taste to me? And another question I have, if I kill a spider, will the karma come on to me? How do I deal with the situation that it might come?
The answer to the question, the second one is yes. You do get karma for killing a spider. And the answer to the first one, what spiritual taste is, it's like when you wake up early in the morning, like 3:30, and your mind, you know, thinks like maybe it should sleep longer, but there's this impetus in your heart that jumps up and says, no, I want to go to Mangal Artik. And you just feel it from within your heart that I want to do this. That's the beginning of spiritual taste. And it just gets better and better. Yes?
I was wondering if you had any advice for moms trying to take their little ones with them out on San Francisco.
We have the most powerful kids program at our temple.
Yeah. Okay.
We have 150 kids. And they take 20% of the, you know, the goals whenever we do them. And they're so enthusiastic about it. They organize themselves. They have their own website for book distribution. And you know what age they start at?
Five.
Little lower.
Two.
Little lower.
One.
Little lower.
In the womb.
Zero. They start at zero. I heard that from Kameshri the other day. She runs our kids program. She was giving a webinar about this. And she said our kids start at zero. They start in the womb. The mothers go out when they're pregnant. They're going door to door. The kids are in there going like, okay, I get it. Yeah, we don't sell it like at a bookstore. By the time they come out, and I discovered this about 16 years ago, I took five-year-olds on book distribution. If I had my PowerPoint, I'd be showing you pictures of this, because I have a historical and photographic evidence. I took five-year-olds out with a few parents to help out, door to door. And I wanted to see what would happen, because Prahlad Maharaj was 5 years old. Why couldn't these devotees start when they're five? And he said, Komara acharet pragno dharmam bhagavatam iha. Start when you're a Komar. Don't wait. So we went out door to door. And one of the doors we came to, the lady was standing on her porch. There was a white picket fence around. And she saw me like this, books in my hand, all the kids around me. And she looks and she goes, oh, no, you don't. She said, I'm a Christian. Kids had no idea what that meant. I stood on the outside of the gate. They charged right through. They surrounded her, and they were going, where's my book? Oh, thank you. They're going, see, this is Krishna here, and that's Arjuna in the battlefield, and look, see, you're not your body. Look, see? And the lady, she's surrounded by these kids. She looks at me, still standing from beyond the threshold of the gate. She goes, all right, how much is it? I said, well, this is going to work out fine. So it's a very sensitive, they sensitize the kids. And there is no degree in any university that can replace kids growing up and learning how to do Sankirtan. It's better than any MBA. It's better than any training program they can go to. These kids are rock solid. If you learn how to face rejection when you're young, and this is how it happened the first time. Kameshri was taking a group around and somebody said, you know, go away and close the door. And she looked at the kids and she could see they were affected. So they went and then sat in the playground. Then they sat in a circle and said, okay, what just happened? What does it mean? They discussed it for a half an hour. And when the kids came out of there, they were educated about something that most people live in fear of their whole life. And it just gets better from there. Book distribution is high sadhana. And when kids learn it when they're young, they become actually compassionate. Not only that, when Narada Muni was a five-year-old, he left home because his mother died, burned down the house. He just left. He already had training by the sadhus. So he went out to see the world and how the modes of nature worked, all the Lord's creation. And when kids get to go in Sankirtan, looking in people's doors, they're going house to house, they meet all kinds of characters. And they start to see how the world really works. They also start to see how all people are the same. They're all living entities, but they're just affected in different ways by the modes of material. This is real spiritual education. And you get it on Sankirtan, because it's high sadhana. And kids are so good at this, because they have enthusiasm, energy, and it's a really beautiful thing. So you could start a kids program and it'll be very successful. You just have a lot of guidance, a lot of snacks, and don't push it hard at all. And you know, when they start like that, we now have 16-year-olds that started when they were zero. And now they're powerful leaders. Powerful leaders. They're ready to take over the reins of management and all kinds of things now because of doing this service and reading Srimad Bhagavatam. They all read Srimad Bhagavatam and study Prabhupada's books. So that's the formula. If you want kids that can run faster, jump higher, and are smarter than the average bear, let them read Srimad Bhagavatam and learn about Sankirtan. There's no training like it in the world. So speaking of training, we should do a little bit. Now, on our website, distributebooks.com, this template is available that tells you the word for word. And I'm going to go over it with you one more time when we stand up. And we're going to, is that all right? Yeah? And we're going to practice saying the template. You'll pick a partner, and then you'll go through the template one time each way, and you'll have a little bit of practice of what to say. Questions before we start? Yes. Well, oftentimes I think of Prabhupada on the Jaladutta and what he's saying, that Krishna, if you want this to happen, please empower me to do this. Because a lot of times people are watching me, most of the time, all the time, because I don't get to go out by myself anymore. I used to. But wherever I go, I'm always training somebody. I have no idea if I can sell a book or not. I have to totally depend on Krishna, and everyone's going, like, you've been talking so much, let's see some magic now. And I'm going, yeah, I've been talking a lot. Krishna, can you show me some magic now? And that's my prayer to Krishna. You know, and I go through the same thing, the same anxiety walking out the door after, you know, 48 years. And I apply the same principle for equanimity of mind, and that is that approach the ripe fruits, just be patient, don't shoot for any particular result. Just depend on Krishna. Be a kind friend to every living entity. Leave everyone with a good impression. I present these things because they're my realization after doing it. And it always has its effect when you go out on Sankirtan. You're always on the edge because it's such a dynamic thing. That's why it's such high sadhana. And then when you come home, you dig into your sadhana because you realize without having a little power from your sadhana coming from Krishna and the holy name, that he may turn off the water, and that's like really scary. I mean, you go out and it's like somebody looks at you and they go, like, you didn't chant your rounds, did you? They can tell. Joshua Hevitz, famous violinist, said, if I don't practice one day, I notice it. If I don't practice 2 days, my teacher notices it. If I don't practice 3 days, everybody in the world notices it. So you have to do good sadhana and then go out and depend on Krishna. Yes, last thing.
Yeah, it's not a question, but I just want to tell you that once we said that about the karma thing.
Yes.
And then said the woe part, and this person was really angry and said, I totally don't believe it. Actually, he said, I don't believe at karma. But
that's okay.
It's become the practice of saying woe after hearing that statement so much that I completely forgot I were not supposed to say woe after the person says,
yeah,
I don't believe at karma.
And then what happened?
And then he was super angry and shut the door right on my face.
Out of 100 encounters, how many times would you say that happens?
Once.
So these are called anomalies. If they don't if they happen 1 out of 3, you can start worrying about it. If they happen 1 out of 20, worry a little bit. It's 1 out of 100, it's not a big issue. There's always going to be some aberration where, you know, somebody woke up on the wrong side of the floor. And, you know, they like, you know, they just say something funny, like, okay, I'm sorry, have a nice day. And you can leave. And there's comebacks for everything, whatever. You can learn those over time. But in this presentation, we're not so worried about the anomalies, the things that are 1 out of 100, even 1 out of 50, even 1 out of 20. We want to worry about the basic things. So don't worry. So, yes. Mataji, yes. Yes, last question.
Thank you so much for the wonderful class. Just have one question that you said that we should ask for the donations.
Yeah.
And we should always take their email addresses and followers.
When they want to give. You'll see when they want to give.
What,
yeah.
What about the, like, we are distributing books in parades.
Parades.
We really don't ask for donations. We are just giving that out freely.
Mm-hmm.
So or whether it's just adding to our book score?
Well, it really depends. Now, parades sometimes are a very special case. And the reason they're special is because, like when a Rath Yatra goes by, it opens up a kind of energy that you normally don't get. They're kind of in awe of the whole thing. They see hundreds of devotees chanting. They see that Lord Jagannath in his cart. Nectar Devotion says anybody who sees the cart is liberated. And so it's kind of a unique case when you're doing like a festival or something like that. And there's a context that kind of opens them up, like, wow, this is far out. It's a spiritual world. And you give them a gift. In Los Angeles at the Rath Yatra Parade for many years, Savas has had us put together. We go down there as a team from our temple and help them. And we put together a little packet that's, you know, sealed plastic bag with a couple of small books in it and a lollipop and a Jagannath sticker. And we give them to people along the route. We have a very organized system for packing them, for giving them out and things like that. And then we have a team walking behind in case anybody leaves it. We pick them up. And the books go out to a lot of people, and that's sort of a unique context, you know, giving them out in there. I don't recommend, you know, wholesale handing out big books. Probably even allowed for giving out pamphlets and things like that during Harinam. Jaid Waitamarish gave me the evidence where Prabhupada said pamphlets, things like that. But big books, it's not such a good practice if you get behind and you want to, you know, you're looking for a bigger store just to go winging big books out, because it reduces the value in your mind of the book. You should have an interaction with people and let them at least say, you know, I don't have any money, but I'm really interested. Otherwise, if you just give it to people who aren't and they throw them around, it becomes a little bit of a burden on the distributor's mind when that happens. Of course, we do have things like Motel Gita, and now that's morphed into Hospital Gita distribution. We've almost done 750,000 Gitas to motels and hospitals now from placing them there. And people are reading them and taking them home and things. So you have to look at each situation individually. But especially for street sankirtan, that's one of the reasons we emphasize like a complete cycle of interaction with people as much as possible. Okay, so I'm going to show you one more time. We're going to stand up and I'm going to show you that this, you don't all have to stand up yet, but do we have books? Okay, so I mean, what's the best way to do that here? Okay, listen one more time, because repetition is important. Hi.
Hi.
I'm just talking to her right now.
Hi.
I'm California. Where are you from?
Hillsboro.
I love Hillsboro. This is from San Francisco to Hillsboro. Books on yoga and meditation show you how to get free from stress. You've heard of stress, right?
Yeah.
Really? Because you don't look stressed. In fact, you look spiritual. What's your secret?
I bike a lot.
I knew it. Here, I'll show you really quick. Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, Tupac Shakur, they all read this. Can you read that?
No.
Uh-huh, just testing you. It's all translated into English from this ancient language, Sanskrit. And out of all the translations, there's over 400 of them, this has become the most popular academically. You've heard of USC?
Mm-hmm.
Georgetown University?
Mm-hmm.
Here. This is it in a nutshell. Life's like a journey. We all start here, we end up here, we're just passing through. Where are you in all this?
Maybe around here.
I'm over here. I was here 5 minutes ago. Now, look it. This shows a self-realized person. A self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees that the spirit's within everyone's heart. You've heard of karma before, right?
Yeah.
What does it mean to you?
Like the cycle of good and bad.
Whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. What do you do professionally?
I'm an elementary school teacher.
Really? This guy used to be an elementary school teacher. We don't sell it like in a bookstore. We only ask for a donation. We don't need the money. The only reason we ask is, it's an ancient tradition. When you give something in return for transcendental knowledge, it connects you to the teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. Thank you. Do you believe in the power of prayer?
No.
Seth, perfect. I'll give you a mantra. This is a beautiful mantra meant to bring self-realization. So it's a little hard to say. I'm going to say it once. You can repeat, and then you'll know how to do it. Are you ready? Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
You're a natural. And this is for being so kind. Now, note that I'm giving her some prasadam.
Thank you.
And if you'd like more information about classes we have, online classes, and ways that you can learn more about the science of yoga and meditation, you can get on our mailing list. Would you like that?
Yes.
Okay, I just have a pad and a pen, always have. Or there's many different electronic ways that you can do it. Like that. And then at the end, Thank you for taking your valuable time. It's been an honor to meet you. Thank you. So that's the progression. And you want to just try to go through, and your partner who's helping you, because we're going to divide up into twos. One person will have the book and the other person will have open hand. And you want to help the person go through the progression as much as possible. Don't put any obstacles, like where you're from, I'm from the spiritual world, or whatever. Or anything like that. Just try to work as a team and let one person get a repetition and go through and see if you can go through all and then see what you've forgotten at the end. And when you're done, we're going to go the other way, okay? Is everyone up for this?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. How do you know that? You can just say, how long have you lived here, or something. Door-to-door can be a slightly different presentation. Is this your home that you've... I'm from California. Well, you can say, is this your home? Do you live here? And they'll say, yes. Yes. Okay, so stand up.
Question.
Yes, probably.
I may be wrong about this, but isn't the majority of the book distribution done just for Indians here when you go in the Raleigh area? Am I mistaken about that?
Well, you go to apartments and you knock on all the
thinking that if even if 50% of the population are Indian families, and you said this formula doesn't really apply.
But I gave the other one that does.
Right.
And the other one's actually even easier. There's barely anything to say except for what I just said. Don't hand them anything. Tell them they know more. You know more about this than I do. And explain to them what you're doing. You know, just in very... Give a little detail about, you know, that the problems of the world can be solved from the spiritual level, and we're doing this with something that you already know about, Bhagavad Gita, but don't put it in their hand and don't give them a card, anything like that. Just explain and then say, and we're doing a fundraiser, and you'll be fine. And the other thing I recommend is do explore other places where you know Indians don't live. Go and learn and how to talk to a wide range of people. Do it as a practice. Don't get flabby and, you know, just like, I only know how to do this. Learn how to do all. You learn how to talk to people from Asia. Learn how to talk to people from America and all these things, and you'll become well-rounded. It just takes a little practice. My heart sings when I see our devotees, Indian devotees, that go out and they go to Haight-Ashbury and they're talking to all kinds of characters down there. And it's really amazing, too, because Americans, when they see Indians, they see authority. They see, this person knows about yoga and meditation. They're my teacher. You guys, you know, you're gurus, really. And so you should go out and assert yourself. Lord Chaitanya already deputized you. Bharta bhumiti hoila manusha janmajar. Be the gurus that you already are and teach these people. You should go out to the Americans also as much as possible and teach them and find Asian neighborhoods and make it available. What do you think? Say yes.
Yes.
Say yes louder.
Yes!
Yeah, exactly. And have 1 month when you all learn Mandarin.
I'm from China.
Ni hao. Ni hen hao. So we have language cards, so you only need a few words. You don't need to learn a whole progression. But you do have to learn how to say a couple words if you really want to be successful in any language, and get the different books. And you'll be amazed. The other day, where were we? In Dallas. And we went to we went to five different spots around town. I took them to a Vietnamese mall, and we brought Vietnamese books with us. And I just showed them how to talk to Vietnamese people. It's like magic. You know, you go in the shops, and they're very, very happy to see you and to take books. And they'll give generously because they're such nice people. And you can learn all the different populations that you have here by looking on Google. Ask Siri where everyone lives and she'll tell you. Okay. So. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.